and welcome to the Asian Society of International Law 101, a space where we discuss international law scholarship from Asia, about Asia, and international law scholarship in general.
So thank you very much, Professor Subedi, for being here today for this interview about your new book. So I have some questions about this fascinating life experience and professional experience that you have written about and discussed in your book. So the first question that I have for you is, can you tell us a little bit why you decided to write this book and why now?
First of all, I would like to begin by thanking you, Dr. Ilaria Javoli, for reading my book and preparing a set of questions for this exercise this morning. Thank you. The reason I wanted to write the book, there were threefold. I have been maintaining a diary, an annual diary, since 1999, number one. Number two, when my assignment for the United Nations as the UN Special Rapporteur for Cambodia came to an end in 2015, I ended my mandate on a positive note. Many people within the United Nations had asked me, you have had positive experience and positive impact on the country. Why don't you document it and write it in the form of a memoir? The third event was when I was awarded the DCL by Oxford. As you know, it's rarely awarded. It's only in exceptional cases, and that award was given to me in 2019. That time also some colleagues at the University of Oxford said, look, you have had a very interesting journey in life. Would be nice if you were to write something reflecting on your experience. That was the third factor. The fourth one, during the lockdown, the COVID pandemic, grounded at home, I thought, what interesting thing I could do? Then I thought, maybe, you know, sort of go through my own annual diaries and see whether some of the material could be utilized to produce a book, basically trying to relive the experience of my life, which I enjoyed. These were the four reasons I decided to write my book, reflecting on my personal and professional life.
Indeed, in the book, there is indeed quite a lot that you talk about, and there are many different events indeed that shaped, I think, your personal and professional experience. So you, at the beginning of the book, you talk about your family experience, your origins in Nepal, and the different values, I would say, really, that shape your being a human being, first of all, and then becoming a professional of international law. So my question for you is, Surya, what were the values that were most important to you while you were studying law in Nepal at the very beginning?
I come from a background where public service ethos run very deep in the family, trying to assist those who are less fortunate than we are. How I could develop myself so that I could serve the society around me better, the people around me, the society around me, and my nation. And eventually, when I became an international lawyer, promoting fairness in international relations, if I were to say in three, four words, I would say promoting fairness in international affairs. These were the values that drove me into action throughout my career. Universalism has been also a strong element running in my family, a global outlook to the world, global issues. So universalism, global outlook to life, and the desire to assist the people less fortunate than I am. So they were very strong in my youth and remain strong to this day.
Yeah, and I guess that I can really see in your book all these values that were then also utilized, and they really were a thread in the whole career that you had in international law, and they were really informing all the different activities and roles that you have performed throughout the years. But so this is about the values and let's say the things that you really have held as your reference points for your personal and professional experience. What about the people that influence you the most in these career and this path of becoming an international lawyer?
I would say the number one would be my professor at Oxford, although it's quite common for people to acknowledge the help they received from their professors. But Professor Sir Ian Brownlee was quite a unique person. He went beyond the call of duty to assist me and guide me in my both personal and professional life. So he was the most influential international lawyer in my life. The second one was the King of Nepal, who later became sort of a friend. I used to assist him, and he used to call upon me for advice on international legal matters, sometimes on constitutional matters. Very gentlemanly person, although he was the king of the country, but he was quite an enlightened king, a benevolent monarch. So these two people were quite influential in the beginning of my career.
Okay. And again, I think that also the people that you just mentioned really give us a sense of the quite wide range of experiences that you had in your life. So the next question I have for you is, what do you think was the turning point of your career? Because you obviously been living in different countries, you had different educational backgrounds. So when was really the point that you think really changed your life and your career?
The first turning point was the completion of my DPhil at Oxford. After spending 3-4 years researching, writing, publishing, I asked myself, am I still a civil servant willing to go back to my 9-to-5 job in the International Law Office of the Government of Nepal, or should I pursue an academic career so that I could develop some of my ideas and disseminate them for the greater good of the society? So that was the turning point. I thought a DPhil or a PhD is basically a passport to freedom, to do what you like to do in life without being constrained by the rules of the government or your office. That was number one event, I would say. The second one, until that time, I had this idea that one day I'll go back to Nepal, not necessarily to my job, but some sort of public life. That's what I was hoping for. But the assassination of the king, King Birendra, during a shootout in the Royal Palace, that was a massive personal and professional blow to me. And then I thought I should continue pursuing my career in the UK. And then perhaps that time I postponed the idea of returning to Nepal to go into some sort of public life.
And again, this what you just told us really gives us an idea, perspective of a global citizen, and also you call yourself in the book, right? So how important really has been for you to be a global citizen, able to travel around the world, perform different roles at international level, representing the UN as special rapporteur in Cambodia? So how important was to be and has been so far for you to be a global citizen?
It has been very important. When people ask me, what is your identity? How would you define or introduce yourself? I say, I'm Surya Subedi, an academic. That's where it begins, that's where it finishes. I'm an international lawyer, and then I have a global outlook. My whole life revolves around tackling global issues, studying them, and exploring how we can make the world a better one for everybody to live in. Therefore, my outlook and the whole family's outlook also has been around as global citizens. The whole family, not only me, both of my children have gone on to develop themselves as global citizens. Therefore, it has been very important for me personally and for my family and for my work. Rather than putting myself in a narrow jacket with certain label, I have decided to stay out of those narrow jackets, narrow labels, and remain a global citizen committed to making my own contribution to make the world a fairer one for everybody to live in.
Yeah, indeed, you mentioned this question of labels and the fact that you don't really like to be labeled, right? So you prefer to be considered as a global citizen that can contribute to the better good of society at international level. So in this sense, I think it fits very nicely my next question, because my question is about your role as UN Special Rapporteur for Cambodia. So you discuss in your book at length your role there, your expectations, the challenges that you really faced when you were doing your different trips to Cambodia and field work. So the question is, what really was the most and is the most important lesson that you learned from your experience as UN Special Rapporteur in that country?
I would say two things. First of all, it is always better to go beyond naming and shaming when dealing with governments, dealing with the leaders of a country, a sovereign country, rather than criticizing them, finger pointing them. My focus was devoted to offering them some constructive suggestions, how they could improve the situation of human rights, rule of law, and democracy. I saw myself as an expert willing to assist the government to embark on the road to democracy, stronger democracy, genuine rule of law. So going beyond the naming and shaming and offering constructive suggestions, number one. Number two, persistence. I came across some unpleasant experience in the beginning, the government trying to undermine what I was doing, some personal attacks on me, but I said, I'm on a mission here. I cannot be distracted by these personal attacks or the treatment meted out to me. I should sustain here. I'm a friend of the people of Cambodia. No matter what the government does, I have a mission here to accomplish, to help the people of the country. Therefore, I was eventually, towards the end of my mandate, the government came round to listening to me and implementing some of my core recommendations. Therefore, persistence in my approach and a constructive approach in tackling the issues the country was facing. These were the two things I think characterized my mandate in Cambodia.
And do you think that, what is your evaluation at the end of these experiences? Is it like a positive outcome? Is it a negative outcome? Or it is something in between?
It was a positive outcome by trying to cajole, persuade the government to listen to some of my observations, recommendations. My recommendations were supported by factual evidence. So they could not challenge the factual accuracies that I had in my reports. Of course, recommendations can be subjective, but they finally came around to listening to me and accepting my recommendation. So I ended my mandate in Cambodia on a positive note.
Okay. So although it was obviously challenging also from a personal point of view, because indeed in the book you mention various attacks that you received from the media, from the public in that country, and sometimes it was also, I would say, also dangerous to a certain extent for you to be there and to speak up for the people of Cambodia. But still, you say it was you can say that it was a positive experience in the sense that you made some sort of change in the country, and you really push for change, for social change at different levels in that country. So when reading your book, I really felt that there was so much that you achieved from an educational perspective, from a professional perspective. So you were a brilliant student, and you got a lot of scholarships as well to study abroad, for instance, at Oxford, but also at universities in the UK for your LLM. So do you have any regrets in this long path, in this successful path, I would say, personally and professionally as an international lawyer?
Thank you, Ilaria. I think one regret I have is that perhaps I am not a role model in striking a work-life balance. That's number one. I think I should have paid more attention to the people near and dear to me. These are the two regrets I have. But looking back, perhaps, in my opinion, the name, fame, and money come and go. Especially a person of my age, when you are one is in their 50s or 60s, all these things become increasingly less relevant. So not having perhaps a proper balance, work-life balance, and not devoting enough time to look after the people near and dear to me.
I guess that is also difficult depending, obviously, on the circumstances, right? Historical circumstances and professional circumstances someone finds themselves into. So in this sense, so you talk about a little bit of regrets and relationships also with your family. But if you were to meet your younger self, so if you think about yourself when you were 20, and so you were at the very beginning of your life, at the very beginning of your professional career, what advice would you like to give to this younger self?
I would say that they should concentrate on specializing in a certain area. The 21st century will be characterized by specialism. I try to emulate Professor Ian Brownlee. As you may know, he made a contribution to more or less every area of international law. It was possible for him then, it is not possible for me now, and it will be harder for other people in the future. So specializing in the area that interests you most, enjoying what you are doing, and then making as much contribution as you can to that field. That's number one, I will say. And number two, again, I will say that one has to have a higher purpose in life. So doing everything you can with a higher purpose, whatever that higher purpose could be, serving the community around you or serving the nation or pursuing certain global values, trying to become a better global citizen in this increasingly interdependent and global society. If somebody, young person were to say that they will become a better global citizen, I believe in one maxim that you can do good to yourself by doing good to the world. That's what I would say.
And I think that this transpires throughout the book, indeed, also from your experience. So you're probably not just giving advice to yourself, to your younger self, but also to the future generations of international law. Do you have any other advice for a person that, for instance, a law student that just finished their studies and would like to pursue a career in international law?
I would say that when I was studying international law, it would have been difficult to conceive at the time that one can make a decent living out of practicing in international law. But these days, international law has grown so much, a phenomenal growth in every area. For instance, international investment law, one of my areas of specialization, the area has grown. There is an opportunity to make a good living out of practicing international law as an international law academic. Can be very rewarding, fulfilling, and satisfying. Therefore, I would encourage people to carry on with the determination and persistence required. No, people don't succeed every time, but again, you know, persistence and determination will bring reward and success to everybody eventually.
Yeah, so it's a very positive, let's say, looking at the career of pursuing a career in international law. So my last question really is about you and your plans for the future, because in your book, you mentioned these in different parts, talking about what the future will bring to you, because you're still not ready, let's say, to retire. You're not still ready to step back from international law as a subject. So what are your plans for the future? How do you see yourself in 10 years' time, let's say?
Thank you. And the first thing, I am conceiving a new project, a research project, under the broad title of a Global Human Contract to tackle the global challenges. I think we need to develop certain new theories, new principles. Around that one, I'm exploring how far that would be possible, number one. Number two, I want to see the rules-based international order strengthened. Unfortunately, as we can see around the globe, there is a flagrant violation of international law taking place. In spite of international law being developed primarily after the establishment of the United Nations, a prohibition on the use of force, prohibition on aggression. So violation of international law and human rights is ongoing around the globe. So how we can strengthen the global institutions, especially the United Nations Human Rights Mechanism, how they can play a more meaningful role in tackling the global challenges that we are facing today, I would like to make a contribution to the work of the United Nations in general and the United Nations human rights agencies in particular, so that they become more powerful, more meaningful in upholding human rights values of the people around the globe. These are the two objectives I have. The third one I have, I come from a country wedged between two rising powers of Asia, China and India. There are some boundary issues between these two countries. These are can be quite explosive. There have been some skirmishes every now and then. So I would like one day to establish something called Center for Himalayan Peace Studies, which will take me back to the idea I was developing in my doctoral thesis at Oxford. So whether it is possible to utilize international law, the interpretation of international law to resolve some of the long-standing boundary disputes, which can be quite explosive between China and India and between India and Pakistan in that part of the world, which is known as the Himalayan Belt or a Hindu Kush Himalaya Belt. I want to do something there to contribute to the peace of the region. These are three objectives that I have in mind for the next 10 years or so. As you say, I'm not quite ready to hang up my coat. I want to go on for another 10, 12 years.
Definitely, and even more probably, because this looks like very important, extremely significant, but also quite demanding and challenging tasks and objectives that you have. So a lot of food for thought for us as well, I think. So thank you very much, Professor Subedi. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And I invite everyone to really read your book, because it's really a source of inspiration for future generations of international lawyers worldwide. Thank you so much
for your kind words, Ilaria. And thank you again for taking your time to talk to me this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us at the Asian Society of International Law 101. And watch this space for future conversations.